So, which verse is for today?
36.
Is it written anywhere?
No, 36.
36, all right.
Chapter 7, what do you call, Canto 7?
7, 9.
Okay.
Prahlad pacifies the Lord with prayers. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Evam Sahasra Badanangri Shira Kura Urunisna Sadhya Karna Nayana Varana Yudhadhyam. Mayamayam Sarupa Lakshita Sannivesham Drishta Maham Purusham. Vishwa Mahapurusham Apamudam Vidincha. Lord Brahma could then see you possessing thousands and thousands of faces, feet, hands, heads, thighs, noses, ears, and eyes. You were nicely dressed, decorated, and bedecked with varieties of ornaments and weapons. Seeing you in the form of Lord Vishnu, your symptoms and form transcendental, your legs extending from the lower planets, Lord Brahma achieved transcendental bliss. Prose purport. Lord Brahma, being completely pure, could see the original form of the Lord as Vishnu, having many thousands of faces and forms. This process is called self-realization. Genuine self-realization consists not of perceiving the impersonal effulgence of the Lord, but seeing the transcendental form of the Lord face to face. As distinctly mentioned here, Lord Brahma saw the Supreme Lord as Mahapurusha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Arjuna also saw Krishna in the same way. Therefore, he told the Lord, Parang Brahma, Parang Dhamma, Pavitang, Paramang Bhavan, Purushang Sasakam Divyam. You are the Supreme Brahman, the ultimate supreme abode, purifier, the absolute truth, the eternal divine person. The Lord is Parama Purusha, the supreme form. Purushang Shasata. He is everlastingly the supreme enjoyer. It is not that the impersonal Brahman assumes a form. On the contrary, the impersonal Brahman effulgence emanates from the supreme form of the Lord. Upon being purified, Brahma could see the Lord's supreme form. The impersonal Brahman cannot have heads, noses, ears, hands, and legs. This is not possible, for these are attributes of the Lord's form. The word Mayamaya means spiritual knowledge. This is explained by Madhvacharya, Mayamayam Jnana Sarupa. The word Mayamayam, describing the Lord's form, should not be taken to mean illusion. Rather, the Lord's form is factual. Seeing this form is the result of perfect knowledge. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Bahunam Janmanam Ante Jnanavan Mam Prapadyate. The word Jnanavan refers to one who is perfectly in knowledge. Such a person can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead and therefore surrenders to the Lord. The Lord's being symptomized by face, nose, ears, and so on is eternal. Without such a form, no one can be blissful. The Lord, however, is Satchidananda Vigraha, as stated in the Shastra. Ishwara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha. When one is in perfect transcendental bliss, one can see the Lord's Supreme Form, Vigraha. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya says, Gandakya Devata Jadvat Divin Vyapya Tishtati Evam Vyaptam Jagat Vishnu Ramatmastang Dadarshaha. Lord Brahma saw that as aromas and colors spread throughout the earth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead pervades the cosmic manifestation in a subtle form. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Namo Vishnu Vadaya Krishna Priestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Viransamani Tinami Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pracharni Nirvisheshon Yuvani Prashyati Deshtarni. So today is Prabhupada's appearance day. Prabhupada appeared 111 years ago in this world. And this verse, Avam, Sahasra Badanangri Shirak Karoruna Sadhya. Karna Nayana Varanayudhadhyam.
Hey, Woodfeld.
You need a microphone? Oh, for the kitchen or something? And for the people in Sun Valley and Sun City. We're all listening to the Bhagavatam class every day, right? Arizona State University. Mayor's office. Etc. Right? It's broadcast to all those places, isn't it?
It's broadcast.
What? Oh, it's being broadcast to Sun City, Sun Valley, Mayor's office,
yeah, of
Arizona State.
Of course.
Of course. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Well, this is really empowering. That is a danger of your being so close. Keep showing up here. The first two lines of this verse are actually mostly a large, long Sanskrit compound, which is that, well, it's actually the last, grammatically, it's the last line of this verse, which has a subject and the verb and the main object. So the subject of this Sanskrit sentence, poetic Sanskrit sentence, is Vinincha, which means Lord Brahma. In India, they kind of invert the H and the M in his name, so it becomes Brahma. It's interesting, isn't it? So Lord Brahma, Vinincha, so Vinincha, Drishtva, seeing, Mahapurusham, Mahapurusha, the great person, he apa, achieved or attained, mudam, bliss. That's actually the sentence, I mean in a simple form, that's the simple Sanskrit sentence here, that Vinincha, Drishtva, Mahapurusham, apa, mudam. Vinincha, Brahma, seeing the Mahapurusha, attained bliss. So what's the rest of the verse here? The rest of the verse is actually consists of two compounds which modify or explain the object of the verb, which is Mahapurusha, explains the Mahapurusha. So the first thing said about the Mahapurusha is that the Mahapurusha is adhyam, endowed with, avam, thus, endowed with sahasra, thousands of vadana, faces, angri, feet, shira, heads, kara, hands, uru, thighs, nasa, noses, adya, etc. Apparently some things go along with noses. And karna, ears, and avarana, ornaments, ayuda, weapons. So the Mahapurusha is endowed with all those things. And sannivesham. Sannivesham means that form is combined together with, or upalakshitam, appearing in different symptoms, maya, mayam. Actually, it's two compounds, maya, mayam, sat upalakshita sannivesham. That the Mahapurusha's form is endowed with or invested with, really literally, is fully invested with sarupa lakshita, all the various symptoms of spiritual existence. And it is mayamayam, which is somewhat interesting. The word mayamayam means made of maya. And so that's why Prabhupada says that the word maya maya means spiritual knowledge. This is explained by Madhvacharya, who says maya maya means jnana sarupam, having a form of consciousness, literally. Jnana sarupam. This is what Madhvacharya says about the word maya maya. It means having a form of consciousness or of knowledge. Prabhupada says the word maya maya, describing the Lord's form, should not be taken to mean illusion. There's Maya. That's one of our key words. We always say, like, that's Maya, which means go for it to some people. But anyway, so, and then the Maya here, Maya, short A, Maya, Maya, Maya. Maya is made from the Sanskrit verb ma, which means to construct. So Maya means are like built of or made of, constituted of, like Anamaya, Gyanamaya, Mahaprasadamaya. So built of or constituted of Maya. Now, why doesn't this mean that the Mahapurusha is just made of Maya? As Prabhupada said, of course, it doesn't mean that. I think to understand this, because someone could say, well, no matter what text says, you just impose your own interpretation on it, so that you're just giving what you think is the right philosophy, regardless of what the Sanskrit says. Someone could say that. And at that point, we would, of course, yell at them and accuse them of being offensive, and then... No, actually, the idea here is that this is not an artificial translation, because we have our jargon. Like the word Maya in Sanskrit is used in many different ways. We tend to use it as a kind of jargon where it means illusion, but that's not... Los cartos abajo, si no se van a caer, cualquier momento. The idea is that the word Maya can mean various things, and although we tend to use it in a very limited way, just because it's one of our terms that we use, in philosophical literature it's used in a much broader sense. So if you think, for example, if you think of Yoga Maya, which is not illusion, well, Yoga Maya creates illusions that increase Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means to love Krishna. And, for example, Yoga Maya makes Yashoda forget that Krishna doesn't really have a mother. But by forgetting that and by believing that I am Krishna's mother, her love for Krishna increases. So, Yoga Maya increases our love for Krishna, whereas Mahamaya decreases our love for Krishna. So they have the opposite effect. And therefore, since the Lord's spiritual Maya or spiritual potency increases knowledge of Krishna in a deep spiritual sense, therefore Maya Mayam here means that. It means that Krishna's body is composed of this potency which increases knowledge, including his own infinite consciousness. So, there you have it. At no extra cost. That explanation was included in the price of my hotel room. As much as you know, I'm not going to charge extra for that philosophical explanation. So, today, of course, is the appearance day of Srila Prabhupada. And certain things are so obviously true, and they're said so often that they become cliches. And of course, I could try to say the same thing with incredible new potency. And I mean, it is always fresh because sometimes. I mean, when it is ever fresh, it's because when you're not asleep, it can be ever fresh. But the idea is that these so-called cliches, these truths that we speak over and over again, they're true, but our realization of them is limited. For example, you may have heard a few times in Hare Krishna temples, we're not this body. Did you ever hear that in a Hare Krishna temple? Yeah, once back in 1990. Anyway, so the idea is that we're not this body, as we sometimes say. And yet our realization is imperfect, because to some extent we still identify with our body, and to some extent we're getting it. So as we advance in Krishna consciousness, as we understand it more and more, we can appreciate it more and more. So in that sense, it is ever fresh if we are advancing. If you're not advancing, basically it's the same old thing. Because if you hear the same thing over and over again in exactly the same state of consciousness, it's just a Vedic rerun, isn't it? Sort of like the Gaudiya Vaishnava version of the I Love Lucy show or something. So the real secret of keeping Krishna consciousness ever fresh is that we have to be advancing spiritually. We have to be growing up. It's like, I mean, imagine if you were, let's say, in elementary school, like in the third grade, you studied certain simple things, and then the next year you were back in the third grade. It's like one of those, like suddenly you were trapped in a Twilight Zone episode, and you keep going back to the third grade. So in that sense, if we are not progressive in spiritual life, if we're not advancing, then we keep hearing the same thing over and over again. And we keep chanting the same thing over and over again, and it starts... Hare Krishna, we have a spiritual event here. Now you may notice that there are not thousands of people in this room right now. Oh my God, where's everybody? So the idea is that to really get a taste for Krishna consciousness, we have to be advancing. And that's why Rupa Goswami says in the Upadeshamrita, when he gives the word Niyamagraha, he says that Niyamagraha will cause our bhakti to diminish. And of course, Prabhupada and the Acharyas translate Niyamagraha as meaning either not taking the Niyama, the rules and regulations. Niyama means rules and regulations. Agraha means not grasping. And agraha means taking it, in a sense, like an end in itself. So there has to be real spiritual advancement, which cannot be fully mechanized. In other words, if the laws of nature have not radically changed, and let's say I do what is often done in a Bhagavatam class, that is drop the kartals. That's one of the great fun things to do in the Hare Krishna movement. You drop a pair of kartals in a Bhagavatam class as you fall asleep. So, I mean, assuming the laws of nature haven't changed, if I drop these kartals, they're going to fall. And they're going to fall every time I do it. Assuming there's no intervention of some mystic force. So, which definitely happens that often nowadays. So, and yet, bhakti, the process of advancing in spiritual life, cannot be reduced down to a completely mechanical thing. Like if you get up at this time, and if you go to Mangalarti, and if you chant your rounds, and you do this, and stay away from the boga. And then, in other words, if you follow all these principles, then you must advance. This is actually the Karma Mimamsa philosophy. That spiritual advancement can be reduced down to a material formula. Because if it were true that just by following certain mechanical procedures you would necessarily advance, then there would really be no need for bhakti at all. You could just decide that, well, I think it'd be fun to be Krishna conscious, it'd be fun to see Krishna. I don't have to actually devote myself internally to Krishna. I don't have to feel any real emotion toward Krishna. Or I don't have to be like really sincere. It's just I just have to get up on time. If I have a good alarm clock and I get up and I say certain mantras, I'll get the higher consciousness regardless of what my internal attitude is toward Krishna. I may be doing it just because I want to enjoy that state of consciousness. I may be showing off to other practitioners. There may be so many different motives. I may be afraid of having to get a real job, and so I live in a Hare Krishna temple. So people can have many reasons for doing what they're doing. And that's why Rupa Goswami says that the external procedures, they're necessary, but they're not sufficient. Because you can't fully mechanize Krishna consciousness. It's not merely a mechanical process, it's a personal process. It involves cultivating a personal relationship with Krishna. So, therefore, it's Vyas Puja, and I will now proceed to say a lot of things you've never heard before on Vyas Puja Day. Not. But the idea is that if we're advancing spiritually, then there will be a certain freshness, not only in the way we hear it, but the way we express it. Otherwise, it's just like, okay, if you have puja, you know what to do. You know what you're supposed to say today, so say it. Isn't it? Some people even like cry, almost like precisely the same amount of tears on such occasions. It's like strictly regulated. So we have to advance. This can't simply become our religion. I mean, it is our religion in a sense, but I think of myself as engaged in a scientific, spiritual science. I'm engaged in a practical, spiritual process in order to achieve my ultimate self-interest. And not only that, but my ultimate self-interest is not to pursue my self-interest, but to pursue Krishna's pleasure. So it's sort of it's a tricky thing, because you have to have a sense of your rational self-interest in order to take to Krishna consciousness, because no one starts from the point of pure selfless love, you know, absolute altruism. No one starts from that point. We all start from the point of pursuing our rational self-interest. In fact, Prahlad Maharaj encourages that. He says, Nate vidu sartha kadingi vishnu. Haribo, maybe Darshan after the class, it's a little distracting. Can you imagine like a university people like walking around? Anyway, but then again, this is a Hare Krishna book. So, Prahlad Maharaj says, Nate bidu sartha kadingi vishnu. People don't understand their actual self-interest is Vishnu. So we have to, it's very easy actually in this fantastically dull, almost totally mindless age that we live in. Consumerism, where, you know, I shop, therefore I am. In this age, we have to remember that we're really engaged in a spiritual process. And we're not just sort of piously going through religious things because it's the right thing to do. We really have to have that, you know, if we ever read these Back to Godhead articles, how I came to Krishna consciousness, it almost always involves something like, I was searching for God, and then I accidentally fell into a dumpster one night and I found a copy of The Science of Self-Realization. Anyway, so usually in like how I came to Krishna consciousness or how I came back to Krishna consciousness after being born in it, you know, there's something about searching for God. But, and then the idea is then I found the Hare Krishna movement, now I'm not searching for God anymore. Now I'm just trying not to overeat on Sunday. But actually, even though we joined the Hare Krishna movement, we're still searching for Krishna. Prabhupada's given us a roadmap. We have a perfect map to Krishna. We know how to get there. We know what Krishna is, but we're still searching. In fact, even the six Goswamis, in that song, Shag Goswami Ashtakam, it said that they were searching for Krishna. These are eternally liberated souls, Nitya Siddha, Nitya Mukta Vaishnavas, and yet they're searching for Krishna. So we really have to maintain throughout our lives this sense of searching for Krishna and trying to achieve this state of consciousness and being creatively dissatisfied with being stupid. Because if you think about it, being in the bodily concept of life is really bona fide stupidity, because we're not this body. Now, until we've had a certain relevant number of life experiences, it may seem like the bodily concept of life is not so bad as long as you avoid sinful activities and, you know, get a few other perks, spiritual, material perks. The bodily concept, it's not the highest thing, it's not the goal of life, but, you know, whatever. It's working for me now. And somehow or other, because you think about it, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Satvatsam Jayate Sukham, from goodness comes happiness. So what if you are a good person? What if you are a materially good person? You don't intentionally harm or mutilate anyone. And, you know, you're sort of like a generic good person. Then according to the Bhagavad Gita, you'll be happy, materially. And if you're materially happy, what's the motivation to really endeavor for pure Krishna consciousness? What if you are, let's say, in terms of your human side, what if you're in the mode of goodness? You don't have any really heavy suffering. You're kind of nice. Hi. I'm a devotee of the mode of goodness. So what if you're in the mode of goodness and nothing really terrible is happening in your life and you're even chanting Hare Krishna? What's the real motivation to intensely try to become Krishna conscious? For many devotees, there is none. I mean, there is if we knew what real consciousness, Krishna consciousness is, and that's why so many times you find devotees, even they suffer some material problem, and then they kind of wake up and, oh yeah, it's about Krishna. That happens to all of us, doesn't it? So that's one of the sad truths of this world, that sometimes we need a swift kick in the awesome to remind us about Krishna consciousness. The best thing would be that even before we're suffering, with strong intelligence, we should try to really become Krishna conscious. In terms of our chanting, in terms of service, don't wait for some disaster in your life, voluntarily. And it's a question of intelligence. That's why Krishna says in the Gita that of all the four people that approach me, chaturvidha bhajante mam, that the intelligent one is the best. Jnani Shrestha. The wise one is actually best, because it's not just like a laboratory rat, like, okay, I'm suffering, Hare Krishna, I'm not suffering, never mind. If you think about it, it's kind of being like a laboratory animal where you get a certain kind of stimulus and then, you know, you cry out to the Lord, and if you get a different type of stimulus, you don't cry out to the Lord. But the platform of knowledge means that we're not just like laboratory animals responding to painful and pleasurable stimuli. I just showed my education by using the Latin form of the plural there, right? Stimuli. Were you impressed? I guess you can't really say stimuluses. But anyway. So the point is we should actually act on the platform of intelligence. Not just like, if I'm suffering, I chant. If I'm not suffering, I don't chant as nicely. But with intelligence, understand the value of Krishna. Remember why we're chanting Hare Krishna at all. The experiences we've had of Krishna's greatness. The fact that Krishna deserves our attention. It's just like when you clean pots, you know, you take some soap pad and scrub it out. I didn't say SOS or Brillo, because I didn't want to, as a leader in history, I didn't want to endorse any product. But let's say you're washing the pots and you take some kind of soap pad and you're scrubbing it out. I mean, sometimes we tend to use the holy name like that. It's like, okay, I feel really impure, I'm not in high consciousness. You sort of take the holy name and use it to cleanse yourself. And actually it's described that way by Lord Chaitanya, where he says sarvatma snapanam, it's, you know, bathing, cleansing all souls. So the holy name certainly does cleanse us, it does purify us. But we're chanting, it's not just like rub-a-dub-dub, it's not just like using the holy name as a soap pad, some kind of, you know, scouring agent. It's actually Krishna. Krishna is actually present in his name. So when it's in the vocative. In other words, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama is addressing Krishna grammatically. So we chant Hare Krishna, we should actually be addressing Krishna. We should be conscious, or to use even a more trendy word, mindful, of the fact that we are in Krishna's presence. And we're actually addressing Krishna. I mean, Krishna's right there, and we're saying something to him. And we should remain conscious that we're talking to Krishna. And when you call someone, it's like if you call someone and they come, but then you're not paying attention to them, like, why do you call them? So when we chant Hare Krishna, even grammatically, we're actually calling Krishna. And so we should be paying attention to Krishna, and not just... Sometimes we can chant very intensely, but we're just really trying to purify ourselves so we'll be happier. You know what I mean? It's like using the holy name as a tool to purify ourselves, but not really consciously addressing Krishna and not really remembering that I just called someone and that person is present because Krishna's in his name. So all these things we learn from Prabhupada. And today is his parents' day. As I said, he appeared 111 years ago, which is starting to sound like a historical number. It's like, I remember the first few a parent's anniversary, if you say, you know, this is Prabhupada's 84th. So you could imagine, well, he might have still been here. He hadn't passed away from certain superficially health problems, he might still be here. But at 111, it's, unless one of those, like, you know, world record holder old people, but, and so the numbers are starting to get historical. I mean, in the near future, we'll say Prabhupada appeared 120 years ago, 150 years ago, 200 years ago. And at that point, it's not just remembering someone who was just here, it's actually sort of like a different slot in your consciousness, which is someone who appeared in a previous historical time. Isn't it? And so it seems to me that the more years pass, there's an advantage and a disadvantage in our sort of increasing temporal separation from Prabhupada. We're not separated from Prabhupada, but just in terms of material time, it's more years. And the one advantage is that sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees. It's like you can be right on top of this big mountain, but when you're right on top of it, it just looks like a hill. And then if you drive, let's say, like a mile away, you start to see, oh, that's a mountain. That's a real mountain. And then if you can say you're 5 miles away, you can actually, it may even look bigger because you're starting to see it in perspective. So distance often is necessary for perspective. And there's a sense in which, as we get farther away from Prabhupada in terms of, not spiritually, but in terms of material time, that we're actually getting a better and better perspective. So in that sense, our perspective is improving. It's not getting worse. We can understand Prabhupada's greatness more. And at the same time, we don't really want to lose that sense of immediate presence of Prabhupada. Because Prabhupada's immediate presence, Prabhupada's being here with us in a very powerful way, doesn't depend simply on physical presence. Because if it were true that Prabhupada's presence with us depends on his physical presence, then it would logically follow that every day that passes we're getting farther and farther away from Prabhupada. So the people who actually lived with him knew him the best, and every day and year that passes, people are understanding Prabhupada less and less, getting farther and farther away from him, which would be actually absurd, because then how could you have a Hare Krishna movement that lasted very long? It must be the case that as time increases, people actually come closer and closer to Prabhupada. And they do, spiritually. We're all coming closer to Prabhupada. So, for example, myself, I, of course, lived with Prabhupada many times when he was physically present, but I'm sure, that I'm more advanced now than I was, say, 30 years ago. And Prabhupada disappeared...
77.
Yeah, so it's now actually 30 years, right? This is the 30th anniversary of his disappearance. So I was with Prabhupada, obviously, more than 30 years ago, or about 30 years ago and before that. And yet, I hope that after chanting Hare Krishna 30 years and following the principles and trying to do some service, I hope that in 30 years I made some advancement. Because if I didn't, it's like, what am I doing here? And what are we doing here if you chant Hare Krishna and serve for 30 years and nothing happens? So, because I'm more advanced now, it must be the case that in a spiritual sense, that I'm closer to Prabhupada, or I understand him more. Because after all, we understand Prabhupada through spiritual advancement. So, even those who had personal association with Prabhupada are coming closer to him in his physical absence. And of course, that's true for everyone. Prabhupada is a spiritual leader. So we're all coming closer to Prabhupada as time passes. Any questions on these points? Hare Krishna to you.
You were saying, you know, that you have advanced in the last 20 years.
30. Yeah. And 20 too. Maybe even since yesterday. Do you see any difference?
Could it be said that knowledge has been decreased or destroyed.
My ignorance.
Has been decreased or destroyed.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's otherwise, I mean, how could you advance and your ignorance isn't less? Like, I'm just as ignorant as I ever was, but I'm much more Krishna conscious. That doesn't sound right, does it?
Doesn't it increase one's ego?
Well, it depends on what's in your garden. You know, if you've got just the bhakti lata, which in America is a bhakti lada. A lada is actually a car made in Yugoslavia. And the Sanskrit word is the bhakti lata. So, as Lord Chaitanya explains, as we water our bhakti lata, our devotional creeper, then we can also be watering the weeds. So we got to pull the weeds out. One of the weeds is pride. I mean, so you can have a parallel situation where I'm advancing and becoming, and the more I advance, the prouder I am in my new position. And so I'm simultaneously cultivating Krishna consciousness and illusion. Of course, it's not solid advancement. I mean, in some ways I'm advancing, but in other ways I'm not. I haven't really pulled up the anchor of sense gratification and vanity. So if we're really advancing, we should become more humble. Like Dharma Krishna is much more humble than today than he was yesterday. I don't know what he did last night.
He had a good sleep.
Yeah, he needed a good night's sleep. So any other points? Okay, on that happy note.